I'll call House Transportation Committee to order. Could we have roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Durham.
Here.
Representative Dooling.
Excused.
Representative Sprunger.
Here.
Representative Barker.
Here.
Representative Worth.
Excused.
Representative Brockman.
Here.
Representative Butcher.
Yep.
Representative Kearns.
Excused.
Representative T. Smith.
Here.
Vice Chair Fern.
Here.
Representative F. Smith.
Excused.
Representative Lynch.
Excused.
Representative Carter.
Here.
Representative Baum.
Excused.
And Chair Logie.
Here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We do have a quorum. We're a little skimpy, but we have a quorum so we can do business. We're going to start. We'll have a hearing. Invite everybody that's out in the audience, if you please, if you're planning on testifying, sign up outside. When you get up to testify, give your name and where you're from and affiliation. We will respect everyone in here and turn your cell phones off, please. And we will start with our senator on Senate Bill 521, a hearing on Senate Bill 521.
Now I see a green hole. Yeah, that's better. Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Shelley Vance, Senate District 34, excuse me. I hail from Gallatin County, serving Belgrade and the surrounding area. Senate Bill 521 is a cleanup bill to clarify some things in legislation passed last session by former Senator Vance. In 2021, Senate Bill 392 was enacted to allow certain eligible projects, including broadband and pipelines, to occupy the interstate right-of-way. MDT began rulemaking in the interim but could not come to agreement with stakeholders regarding some of the sideboards, and it was discovered that clarifying legislation would be needed to tweak the statute prior to rulemaking. Senate Bill 521 does several things. Clarifies the Dig Once statute applies to state and interstate highways in Montana. The bill provides clarification around the meaning of fair market value to be paid to the state, and provides the ability of the applicant to apply to the Federal Highway Administration for a clean energy or connectivity exemption from paying fair market value, but that exemption is not guaranteed. The bill also enhances the definition of public interest and includes reference to wireless facilities as an eligible project. Mr. Chair, there are stakeholders in the room who have been involved for a number of years who will testify and be able to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Do we have proponents?
Good afternoon, Chair Logie, members of the committee. For the record, Jesse Luther, last name is L-U-T-H-E-R, appearing today on behalf of Mitsubishi Power Americas. This bill is important. I know it's coming late in the session, but it's not coming late in the session because no one cares about it. It's something that the stakeholders here supporting the bill today have been working extremely hard with each other as well as MDT to try to come to an agreement on the appropriate terms that need to be outlined in legislation. Senator Vance did a nice job of going through and explaining generally what the bill does. In Section 1, that is the clarification to the Dig Once statute, and says that MDT shall notify companies when they are planning both a state highway project or an interstate project to ensure collaboration. Section 2 is the meat of the bill. This was what was passed in Senate Bill 392 last session, and this applies to longitudinal access for certain projects in interstate right-of-ways. So we need some clarifications here to ensure that MDT can put together rules through a rulemaking process that establishes a process by which eligible projects and companies can apply to MDT and the Federal Highway Administration for occupancy in the right-of-way. Eligible projects include pipelines, fiber optic or other communications type cables, and wireless facilities. Wireless facilities were inadvertently left out of the legislation last time. Eligible projects must be in the public interest, and the public interest is also defined in Section 2 and includes clean energy and connectivity projects, broadband infrastructure, and anything else determined by state policy that is in the public interest. The owner of an eligible project must apply to the department, demonstrate compliance with this statute, and pay the $100 fee to the department for the application. And then MDT will work with the Federal Highway Administration to work the application through the process, and within 90 days of final approval by the Federal Highway Administration, MDT will either approve or deny the application submitted to them. MDT and the applicant will agree to pay fair market value for occupancy of the right-of-way. That is also defined in the bill to be $100 a year a mile. So for a 30-year term that these right-of-way use agreements are, that would be $3,000 a mile. The bill also clarifies that applicants can apply to the Federal Highway Administration for an exemption from paying fair market value if they meet the clean energy and connectivity standards established in Federal Highway Administration guidance. We think this is an important clarification bill. We think this is good for Montana, for all sorts of projects that could go into our right-of-way, and urge a due pass. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chair, committee members, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Bridger Malum. That's M-A-H-L-U-M. I'm here with Charter Communications. I think it's the first time I've been before this committee this session, so thank you all for the great work you do in the highways and transportation space. And at Charter, we're a familiar TV, internet, and mobile provider that operates in many parts of the state, and we have over 250,000 customers in Montana. We also rise in support of Senate Bill 521 for the reasons that have already been stated, and we also think that, that this removes a barrier to deployment. When we're talking about how, at both a state and federal level, how big broadband has become as far as the emphasis on getting it to more unserved and underserved locations in the state, I think more often with these projects as they come forward, it's going to be looked at, can the interstate right-of-way be a viable use to make those connection points even shorter for when those projects are deployed? And we think that this bill is a reflection of how to be able to utilize that right-of-way without making it cost-prohibitive. So we would urge to pass the bill and appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. Further proponents? We'll referee if we have.
Looks like it's the telecom gang first. Members of the committee, my name is Jeff Feiss, F-E-I-S-S, General Manager of Broadband Montana, representing locally owned broadband providers serving throughout rural Montana and beyond. And I'm not sure if I've been before this committee either, so I join Mr. Malum in congratulating, commending you for the hard work you do. I also want to commend the sponsor for bearing with us, being stakeholders who have been working with the Department of Transportation, who also deserves credit for coming a long way in accommodating rules and now amending the law that was enacted last year to allow broadband facilities to be put into the interstate right-of-way. And then there were rules, and the rules led to a bunch of stakeholder meetings, which led to this legislation. So here we are. The bill, as Ms. Luther pointed out, requires the department to appeal or apply to the Federal Highway Administration for clearance for a waiver of fair market value assessment on broadband infrastructure. And I think that's key. And then the companies that I represent, the broadband providers of Montana, are utilities, and the federal rules go further and say utilities are, by definition, in the public interest and should be accommodated in interstate rights of way. So we are here to support the bill that clarifies both the rulemaking process and going forward, make sure that as we receive hundreds of millions of dollars in Montana to deploy infrastructure, that the Highway Department and the interstate right-of-way are not in the way, but instead are helping to facilitate broadband deployment. And therefore, we support the bill and commend you and the sponsor and the department. Thanks.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Everybody wants to go first, eh? Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dave Galt, and I'm here today representing the Montana Petroleum Association. We supported this entire concept 2 years ago, and we stand in support of this bill today. We think it's a unique opportunity that our members in the business have as an option, and we support the bill, and we're glad to answer any questions. Thank you.
Further proponents?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name's Amy Grimolis. It's G-R-M-O-L-J-E-Z. I represent Verizon Wireless, and we too wanted to echo our thanks to the good bill sponsor, to the floor sponsor from last session, of course, and to all of the folks that worked on this in the interim. It was a lengthy process. We think it ended up with a great result with this bill, and it does include the wireless component in it now that we think was inadvertently left out in the last legislation. So thank you. We'd ask for a due pass.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Margaret Morgan, M-O-R-G-A-N. I represent T-Mobile USA. We're here to ask you to please support this bill. This is just one piece of the broad efforts to expand broadband and connectivity across Montana. And this provides an option when the need arises for any given project. Thank you. We ask for your support.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good afternoon, Chair Logie, members of the Transportation Committee. Mark Baker. I have the privilege of being counsel to both Charter Communications and AT&T. You've heard from Bridger Malum on behalf of Charter. Let me say on behalf of AT&T, we too support this legislation. It's been a long process to get to the second committee in the second chamber. 2 years of basically work with the department and the administration and the various stakeholders to get to where we are today. I really appreciate the department's willingness to engage and resolve the various issues that were left outstanding from the last bill 2 years ago. I think we're at that point. Certainly encourage, do concur in this legislation. Also wanted to mention that Ben Aaron, A-R-O-N, who represents the CTIA, which is the Wireless Industry Association, has been intimately engaged on this issue on behalf of the wireless industry. He couldn't make the hearing today, but wanted to lend his support for the legislation as well. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Further proponents? Do we have opponents? Informational.
Good afternoon, Chair Logie, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jason Gillum, spelled G-I-L-L-I-A-M. I'm here on behalf of the Montana Department of Transportation as a right-of-way bureau chief and will be here as an informational witness.
Any further informational witnesses? Questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Gillum, please.
Chair Logie, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gillum, I can see the plowing in of fiber optic. That's pretty self-explanatory with the reimbursement rate. How does this, what does the picture look like with cell towers if we're shooting that signal? How does the state get reimbursed on those? The price per mile, I can understand that. But if we're not actually physically plowing lines in, what does the reimbursement look like if we're doing cell towers to shoot that signal between areas?
Chair Lowley, Representative, in terms of your question on the reimbursement, I'm not clear on.
Well, it has here on page 3, line 5, the fair market value that we get paid, that the DOT gets paid or the state gets paid.
Correct.
$3,000 a mile for a 30-year term. That's super simple if you're plowing lines in, but if you're shooting that signal and putting cell tower to cell tower, do you get reimbursed over the mileage, or is it just by the footprint of the towers? What does that look like?
Great question. So those wireless facilities do require fiber as well as power. So it will still be measured on a per mile basis.
Yes, Representative Fern.
You could stay there. That's great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gillum, I noticed that there's Ms. Luther's here representing Mitsubishi. And in last session on tax committee, we dealt with the subject of green hydrogen. And I'm wondering, when you look at the rate, there would certainly be a difference between, like, displacement for fiber versus maybe our larger transmission lines to move other things. Does that come into consideration with the rate that you're charging?
Chair, Representative, it's just a flat rate.
Could I do a follow-up with
yes.
Ms. Luther, maybe?
Go ahead.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Fern.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. Welcome to transportation. Do you have any, nothing that's proprietary, of course, but do you have any updates on, you know, your client's activity in Montana and if there's any movement towards fruition on Mitsubishi's plans?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fern, I don't have any updates at this time. They're still analyzing all of the component parts and what it would take to put together a green hydrogen plant in the state.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Yes, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Mr. Gillum, please.
Chair Lowy, Representative.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gillum, I heard during the testimony a discussion around applications that would be approved by FHWA but potentially declined by MDT. Can you talk to us about what the parameters might be around an application such as that?
Chair, Representative, absolutely. So the tentative process will be, once we receive the application, we'll submit that to FHWA for a preliminary authorization. Once that's approved, we'll begin our typical permit processing application. We'll send that back to FHWA for final approval. If FHWA approves it, then we'll do a final assessment. In terms of denying that, it would basically be, you know, if there's not space available or right-of-way available.
Sure.
Mr. Gillum, I'll ask a question while you're talking, or while you're up there. And that process would actually go through talking interstate highway, but how about secondary roads?
Chair, good question. It would be a very similar process. It would still go through the online UPass permitting process, and it would be a very similar process.
Any other questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Dooling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for being late, and maybe this was already covered earlier, but I have a question for, I guess, Mr. Gillum, since he's there. On page 2, it says applicant may propose to the department an alternative to payment of fair market value by offering a comparable in-kind contribution. What would that be?
Chair, Representative, for instance, if we were interested in obtaining our own infrastructure or conduits or fiber, it would be more of a contribution, you know, rather than the facility owner paying MDT for that fair market value, we would receive facilities in the same amount.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith, yes.
Last question, just to kind of dovetail and stay there. Don't go anywhere, please, sir. To kind of dovetail on that question, because we have all these different competitors, AT&T, T-Mobile, Charter, obviously different, you know, vying competitors. How does it look with, are we going to be under construction here every year when they want to go ahead and put another line in, and then we have Charter wants to put another line in? Is there any collaboration between the different power players that to make one mess one time and be done with it?
Chair Lovely, Representative, yes, you're absolutely right. That alludes back to the dig one spill. Try to maximize those efforts and minimize disturbance to the right of way.
Any further questions? Yes, Representative Carter.
For Mr. Gillum, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Mr. Gillum, what about the exceptions for paying the fair market value? How often do they happen? What's the process for getting approved? And what type of exceptions are allowed?
Chair, Representative. So, to my knowledge, there have been no exceptions approved thus far. But we will facilitate and be the liaison between MDT, the facility owner, and FHWA. We'll submit that for their review. It will be... One second here. The exception will be based on FHWA's guidance in their recent memos, social economic benefits to the public.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I'll have one more for you while you're there, and that would be the in coming up with the $100 per mile. How much negotiating went into that $100 a mile? Is that a highway offer, or is that a user offer, or how did that money come out, that dollar amount come about?
Chair Logie, I would say it was a negotiated effort, a partnership effort.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, would the sponsor care to close?
Thank you. I would. Mr. Chair, member of the committee, right now, if someone needed to access the interstate right away, there's no opportunity. We need the bill so MDT and the stakeholders can finish the application process through rulemaking. So I would encourage a do pass on Senate Bill 521. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And that closes the hearing on Senate Bill 521. And thanks for coming and testifying. We'll move on now. We have one of our own with House Joint Resolution 15. We'll open the hearing. Representative, you're on.
Thank you. Hello, my dear committee members. Representative Dave Fern, House District 5, Whitefish in the North Flathead Valley. This committee has looked at the challenges of constructing and maintaining shared use paths within the state. We've looked at models of cost sharing with users and some attempts to do so in other states. In other words, looking at how they do so, how they do if they're accomplished in other states as far as sharing the costs. House Joint Resolution 15 looks to be a more comprehensive study that would include stakeholders such as the Department of Transportation, representatives from the recreation sector, business owners, experts in the field, to help guide the committee to attainable ideas for such implementation. So here are a couple questions. What are shared use paths, and what are cycling route networks? Shared use paths are designed for both transportation and recreational purposes and are used by pedestrians, cyclists, skaters, equestrians, and other users. A common application is to use shared use paths to close gaps in bicycle networks. The Adventure Cycling Route Network is the forenamed organization headquartered in Missoula, having cycling route network nationally of over 50,000 miles. It is developing a national network of officially recognized, numbered, and signed bicycle routes that connect rural, suburban, and urban destinations. So one can see that shared use paths and cycling route networks team up to provide continuous bike-friendly routes with symbiotic missions. But they are different in what they do, what the engineering guidelines for them are. And some are, when we look at networks, they may just be posted roads with shoulders and that sort of thing, versus, again, the shared use paths. Within the last 2 weeks, it was announced as part of the American Rail Trail, the Rails to Trails Conservancy, a shared use trail will eventually be built between Livingston and Gardner atop the old railroad grade. as well, looking close by, in Washington, one can ride on more than 200 miles of continuous trail under Palouse to Cascade State Park system. Presently, Montana lags behind other western states in path funding. It ranks 42nd in the nation on metrics that include investment in infrastructure, bike-friendly policies, and tourism promotion. Coordination, funding, maintenance, safety, fitness are words when we consider the content within HJ 15. So I'll sit down and let any proponents fill in some of the gaps I may have missed, and I'll answer questions and make a closing. Thank you, committee members.
Thank you. Proponents, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Logie and members of the committee. My name is Logan Smith, L-O-G-A-N-S-M-I-T-H. It's a pleasure to be with you again today. I am here representing Bike Walk Montana as the executive director. As you all may know, Bike Walk Montana's mission is to make biking, walking, and rolling safe and accessible for all Montanans. So I am here today to express and request your support for HJ 15. Bike Walk Montana believes that this is a strong bill to build on a previous study bills that have come before this committee in past sessions and has a more comprehensive approach. So you'll see that HJ 15 study bill focuses on planning, prioritization, funding, stakeholder engagement, and policy, seeing where there were gaps in earlier study bills. So earlier this session, you heard House Bill 776 from Representative France that was planning long-range transportation options through shared use paths. And one of the things that, you know, I really resonated with and you all conversed about is how that bill needed to change to move forward for this type of transportation option. So the first thing that you all mentioned was the eminent domain issue. And this particular study bill looks at policy and statutes that govern. And so a part of this study bill would be encompassing potential eminent domain bills that pass during this session or in future sessions. So I think that that really captures that issue. We had additionally heard that funding was another major concern. So this study bill indicates that there would be identification of funding options for developing and maintaining shared use paths. The Department of Transportation currently has a shared use path plan. And so that plan looks at the maintenance of shared use paths and inventory, which is critical. And I think that this bill will build on the foundation that MDT has built. So using that and projecting us forward as a state. So we know and see that our communities in Montana are growing. We see that in our housing markets. We see that in urban sprawl. And so we want to make sure that connectivity is coming to the forefront. And shared use paths really allow us to connect our communities. So whether that's something coming in from East Helena and biking from East Helena into here to the Capitol to testify, or is it someone in Belgrade who's going to work and needs a space to be able to do that safely. Shared use paths really provide transportation systems connectivity with minimal cross flow to motor vehicles. And so this is also a safe option for folks. So I urge a due pass on this bill, and please let me know if there are any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents.
Chair Logie, members of the committee, my name is Bob Walker. That's W-A-L-K-E-R, and I am a walker, too, incidentally. I'm representing the Montana Trails Coalition. I am a volunteer, and I live near Clancy. We urge you to approve this HG 15. I wanted to relate to the Montana Pedestrian Bicycle Plan that was produced by the Montana Department of Transportation. And it does include, under recommended strategies, support to promote local and regional transportation, trail, destinations, and explore innovative, viable funding alternatives. Now, I'm going to go off on funding here in a minute because I think it's important to this conversation. HJ 15 includes identification of funding options for development and maintaining shared youth paths. You're all fully aware of the bipartisan infrastructure law that passed Congress. There's a fact sheet produced by the Federal Highway Administration that says nationally, and MDT, the representatives here, could give you the amount coming to Montana, but nationally in fiscal year 2024, $1.439 billion will be available, and in 2025, $1.489 billion will be available through transportation alternatives programs that the Montana Department of Transportation administers. We also, you, passed a law back in 2019. That law is 23-2109, and it creates the Trail Stewardship Program. It's a grant program administered by Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. I wrote the draft of that bill, and we specifically included, among other things, in that bill that money could be used for development and maintenance of shared youth paths. So there's state money that is available. I serve on the State Trails Advisory Committee also, and I have not seen an application yet come in for maintenance of a shared youth path, even though the money is there. HJ 15 recommends a study of potential new routes for alternative transportation, but also includes a plan for funding the program. Matter of fact, in State Law 60-3-308, Shared Youth Path, the Department of Transportation shall, to the extent funds are available, establish projects for maintenance and repair of shared youth paths. And in the final report to the 67th Montana Legislature, HA 45, Path of the Future, it suggests that Fish, Wildlife, and Parks should cooperate with Montana Department of Transportation with planning funding alternatives for shared youth paths. There's a whole lot of talk in law and in reports, but I haven't seen a plan. Our suggestion is that, and I hope for the world you'll approve HA 15, but it should include not only the Montana Department of Transportation, but also Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, Montana Department of Commerce, Montana Office of the Federal Highway Administration, the USDA Forest Service. I think you can hear clearly. I'm very much in support of House HA 15. And I certainly hope you'll approve this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Further proponents, do we have any outside the door? We have some online.
Yes, Mr. Chair. First up, we have John Jurek.
Thank you. Patch him through, please.
Okay.
There you go.
John Juras, J-O-H-N-J-U-R-A-S. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Great, thank you. I'm with the Great Falls Bicycle Club and Bike Walk Montana. First of all, members of our club really like to explore trail systems around Montana and around the country, especially long shared use paths. We spend a lot of money as tourists in the towns and cities of Montana, and we hope that we can draw other folks in to do the same thing. Not only do we benefit bicycle tourists by having extended shared use paths, but we also benefit active transportation folks who may need to or want to ride their bikes or walk instead of using their cars for transportation. Montana can do more to provide for safe infrastructure for those folks. And they could. Other Western states certainly do. Colorado, Nevada, Washington, Oregon have dedicated funding for shared use paths and active transportation improvements. Montana does not. We can study other states and figure out what approaches they take to helping pay for those kinds of facilities. For example, in Colorado, there's over $1 billion of state funding is accessible for multimodal transportation projects to boost bicycling and transit. maybe Montana's not ready for that level of investment, but there's certainly more that we can do. This study would help prioritize ways that that can happen with logical routes and ways to pay for their construction, especially pay for their maintenance. That's one of the challenges we have is how do you maintain those facilities? And there's great examples around the country that this study would help us draw into communal knowledge and be able to apply in making things better in our state. Recently returned from presentations by the Federal Highway Administration and the U.S. Department of Transportation. Those folks were talking about, as Bob Walker mentioned, the funds that are available are very much out there. There's a lot of encouragement for states to take advantage of the opportunities that are there. The Highway Administration said there's over $1 billion over 5 years just for planning of infrastructure. And in the first year of the round of those funds, it was over 20% of that money went unclaimed. So there's room for communities, counties, and state governments to do that studying and get that paid for. They also talked about the other funding programs, Active Transportation Infrastructure Investment Program. One was that I thought was interesting for Montana, Federal Lands Access Program will pay for improved access to federal lands. Well, the Safe Streets for All is another. Whitefish, I know, is among one community that's taking advantage of that, trying to figure out ways to get folks around in active transportation. So there's a lot of variety of funding through the Highway Administration, through FEMA, through EPA. We'd like to see those kinds of options understood better in our state. Of course, we have the transportation alternatives. That's great. And it's great that MDT has stepped up and helped to make funding assistance for preparing applications to that program available for communities, grants to make that happen. So that's much appreciated. Really, what I want to say primarily is really our economy is becoming more tourist oriented, and let's help to make bicycle tourism part of that equation. Please do pass HJ 15. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Juris. Our next person online.
Next, we have up Jean Belange Nye.
Thank you.
Hey. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Chairman Logie, members of the committee, my name is spelled Jean, JEANBELANGIE hyphen NYE. I'm speaking as an individual, but I am the chair of the Bitterroot Trail Preservation Alliance. I have served on God knows how many committees, focus groups, et cetera, building shared use pathways. I was involved in the development of Highway 93 South. I was one of the authors of the Tiger Grant for the Lolo to Missoula connection on shared use paths, and I'm now the recreational representative for Western Montana to the BLM RAC. So this is an area of passion for me. I'm an old lady. I don't ride anymore. I hardly walk anymore. However, I think it's imperative that we pass this HJ 15 very simply because we need the communication. We need to open the communication because what I am hearing from everybody is how we need to do all of this, but my group's work with the Montana Department of Transportation is not getting anywhere. We have requested maintenance because we have the contract. We're one of the few trail systems in the state that have a contract between the county, the Friends Group, and the state. And the state is not honoring its section and hasn't for 20 years. There's one small section they've fixed. The major sections they haven't fixed. So maintenance is a really big issue. And as Bob said, the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks grants are wonderful. We're putting in 54 miles of bollards with emergency signage, mapping, every QR codes, everything will be on those bollards running from Missoula all the way south to south of Hamilton. We're involved in acknowledging the trail system that wants to connect with the Trail of the Coeur d'Alenes and go to Butte. We would like to see the trail go from Glacier Park. This is big dream, big, big dream. Glacier Park to Yellowstone via the Bitterroot Valley. The thing is that it's already about a third of the way done. It wouldn't all be shared use path, but it would be shared use. It would be continuous course all the way down to Salmon and through Highway 49. So there's all sorts of development. The thing I like about this particular proposal is that it includes the stakeholders. The Highway Department has been doing a two-year study on Highway 93 south of Missoula because of the heavy traffic load. The stakeholder they forgot to talk to was the bike group, and we are really impacted by that traffic. So we are now a stakeholder because somebody told me about it and I made the call, but we're not getting the information that we need, and that is a real concern. So I think what we need with this committee is this kind of connection where not only is it the Department of Transportation and legislators, but people from the general community. So with that, I urge the passage of HJ 15. Thank you very much for your time and energy to all of you. Take care.
Thank you. Our next person online.
Next up, we have Kevin Bell.
Kevin Bell, please.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great, thank you. Yes, I am Kevin Bell, and I work for Rails to Trails Conservancy out of Washington, D.C. Though I feel like I've traveled enough to Montana for this project that I could be an honorary citizen, but at this point, I love hanging out in Montana. So I wish I could be there in person, but I am the project manager for the Great American Rail Trail, which is referenced in HJ 15. It's a cross-country multi-use trail spanning between Washington, D.C. and Washington State, and the trail is already about 55% complete, with just over 2,000 miles on the ground and about 1,700 miles more to build. I won't go into all the details, though I'm glad to answer some questions if you have them. But really, this bill would be very important for not only just the Great American Rail Trail as it goes through Montana, but trails in general in Montana. We've learned that a trail of this nature really has the ability to present outsized economic development benefits for a state like Montana. Trail use and trail tourism has been on the rise since before the pandemic, and outdoor recreation has only gained a more elevated national and statewide profile since then, as you all can very much attest to in Montana. I'll quickly share that RTC did hire a consulting firm out of Bozeman, Headwaters Economics, to complete a study of the economic potential of the Great American Rail Trail when it's completed. And nationwide, the trail could generate 25 million trips annually, and almost $230 million in annual visitor spending across the country. Personally, I think that's very conservative. But in Montana, those numbers translate to 1.1 million trips annually and over $16 million in annual visitor spending. Headwaters also looked at the numbers in a few counties across the U.S., and we chose Mineral County in western Montana as one of those counties to focus on. So breaking these numbers down for a small rural county like Mineral was useful to help make the case for investment in a project like this. And actually, I was out there in the fall and I got to present and I got to meet you, Chairman Logie, and presented to the Mineral County Commissioners that study found that the county alone could see $1.2 million in annual visitor spending upon the completion of this trail. And for a county of about 5,000 people, that's potentially be a significant boost to the local economy. Where this bill helps out is we've worked with the state over the last several years to identify the preferred route of the Great American Rail Trail. Though if you spend any time on our maps, you see that the route is only about 25% complete in Montana. And we have to identify the remaining corridors. We have some ideas, but we really could use support from the state to look into what that could look like. So I will leave it at that. RTC encourages the committee to move this forward, and I'm glad to answer any questions if you have them. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Next proponent online.
Next up, we have Morgan Tuss.
Hi there. My name's Morgan Tuss. I'm located over here in Billings, Montana, and I live at 2837 US Highway 3, Billings, Montana, 51106. I'm here On behalf of Billings Trail Net, as a board member of Billings Trail Net, we obviously advocate for shared use trails and multi-use trails, certainly in Billings and of course across Montana. And, you know, having been given information about HJ 15, I just want to appear in as a proponent and say that Billings Trail Net supports this. I think that the legislature is, and as evident from, you know, many of the other proponents in this hearing, the legislature could use information about both the benefits and drawbacks of shared use trails for public use in Montana. And I think it would be an excellent propeller for more conversation and development, hopefully, of shared use trails in Montana. So just generally would like to voice our support for the bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Tuss. Next online.
Next up, we have Terry Spath.
Proceed, please. Terry Spath. Unmute, please.
Terry, if you could unmute yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Terry Spath, Helena, independent cyclist. Last name is Sierra Papa Alpha Tango Hotel. Good afternoon, Chairman Logie and members of the Transportation Committee. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to state my support for HJ 15. I come at bicycling from a slightly different perspective. I've been an FAA licensed pilot since 1976 and have held an airline transport pilot's license since 1988. I'm still flying professionally and currently have a great job flying Dick Anderson Construction corporate plane. Being a pilot is a little bit like being a professional athlete. One's physical health is of utmost importance. For over 60 years, I've been a bicyclist, and I attribute my good health, at least in part, to riding a bicycle whenever I can. I commend the committee for exploring avenues for increasing and improving bicycle routes, since bicycling is much safer and more enjoyable when segregated from vehicular traffic. Please support HJ 15. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Spath. We have one more online, I believe.
They didn't log on. There's no one else, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Any further proponents? Opponents? Informational.
Chairman Logie, committee members, my name is Carol Strizich, spelled S-T-R-I-Z-I-C-H. I'm with the Multimodal Planning Bureau at the Department of Transportation, and I'm here to answer any questions you may have.
Any further informational questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Butcher.
I think I'll go up to the Mr. Bells if he's still on from Washington, D.C.
Is your mic on?
Here. Okay. I guess I would like to, Mr. Chairman, like to ask a question of Mr. Kevin Bells. Is he on?
Yes, I see the name.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bells, got a question here for you. We've had another bicycle bill that came through here. And I got well over 100 emails from people that were having a fit over electric bikes being on these shared paths. Now, what's your position on allowing people on electric bikes to also share these paths?
Sure. I work for Rails to Trails Conservancy, so I'll speak on an official capacity there. And we don't have an official position. We leave that to local jurisdictions to decide on their desire for that. There are electric bikes that the majority of them only go a certain speed, though there are some people who will disobey that. There are people who will do that across all sorts of platforms. So that might be more user regulation than regulating the bicycle itself, but RTC does not have an official stance on that.
Follow up
for the sponsor. For the sponsor?
He's planning his closing, apparently.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. You know what I was doing is I've got this big thing on shared use, so I was digging up speeds on it to, you know, okay.
Well, I guess you've heard my question to Mr. Bells in the national network, Mr. Chairman and Representative. Are we going to wind up now with a big battle between the electric bike users and everybody else over this pushing through this shared trails thing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butcher, I mean, keep in mind that we already do have trail use. We also have shared use trails in the state. And so I'm not sure what's going on as far as contentious things. You know, on the Bitterroot stretch, we have areas in the Flathead where we have it. My personal view is I think if you recall, there are different types of electric vehicles. And so there's a lower speed self-propelled or pedal-propelled one. And so there are some electric bikes that would be, in my mind, more appropriate and some that would not be. So I don't have I haven't staked out a position on that at this point. I mean, I've read in my introduction the multi-use approaches to shared youth, you know, that's skating and equestrian and that sort of thing and walking. So I think it's yet to be determined where that will end up. But if you're getting, 100 emails or so with obviously there is strong public sentiment based on what you received to segregate the motorized from the unmotorized. But different organizations take different viewpoints on it. And we had a bill from Representative Gunderson that looked at that issue. And yes, it was very contentious, and it was hard to reach consensus on that bill, Mr. Chair.
To follow up, Mr. Sherman.
Go ahead.
I guess I have a real problem supporting some big project when you can't get anything unified, when they're wanting shared use for horses and whatever else,
Mr.
walking
Chair,
and horses.
I'd like a point of order. I mean, this is a study bill regarding shared use. It's not regarding all these other.
Well, I'll let it go a little because it is shared use. How far will it go? But it is a study bill, so deal with that.
I think I could answer just what you're saying, Representative Butcher, because I think you're defining why we need a study bill. We do need to get the stakeholders together, and that's an issue that's really worthwhile having a worthwhile discussion. So, I'm looking at design speed. There are specifications for these, and whoever uses this has to fulfill, you know, the specs of the trail system. That's really important. But I think the study would be helpful to kind of look at issues like that you bring up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Durham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Bell, if he's available still.
Yes, I'm still here.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. The 1.2 million, Mr. Chair, the 1.2 million infusion into Mineral County, I think, was exciting. What was the number of cyclists that you were expecting, and how much money were they each going to contribute to get to that amount?
In Mineral County specifically?
I'm sure. Yeah, that was the information I think you provided.
Yes, forgive me. I don't have that number in front of me, though. I can pull it up in just a quick second here. So looking at the numbers we got from Headwaters Economics, they did a study based on all sorts of other factors and other trails that have their own studies. So averaging that out around the country with trails of similar varieties. They looked at 74,000 annual trail trips per year along the trail section in Mineral County. So forgive me, I don't have good on the fly math skills, but that is somehow factors towards the 1.2 million in annual visitor spending along the route.
Thank you, Mr. Bell.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, question or follow-up question similar to Ms. Carolyn Strizich, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Durham.
Thank you for being here, Ms. Strizich. Do you have kind of an estimate for cost per mile for a developed trail? And I know there's different levels of development, but what's the ballpark for a shared use trail?
Chairman and Representative Durham, we typically use the cost estimate of $1 million a mile. And as you noted, there are different design standards. That $1 million a mile is specific to what we at the state level would be required to build to for federal funding. We do have, I think it was during the last interim, we did look at three different communities and asked for their average cost per mile, and it was in the $800,000 or $900,000 range.
Mr. Chair, final question, follow-up. Ms. Strizich, and I guess this would probably be part of the study bill, though, but as far as users adversely affecting the trail, do the more users that use one of these shared use trails, do they make the trail better or do they degrade the trail?
Chairman, Representative Durham, the design that the federal government requires us to design to is hard surface and pedestrian and bicycle usage probably has less impact as time does on a trail, you know, just weather and time would be my guess, but I'm not an engineer.
That's what I was thinking as well. Thank you.
You bet.
Further questions from the committee? Ms. Strizich, I'm glad to see you. We haven't had you here much, so we've seen you before. Appreciate you coming. No further questions? Would you care to? Oh, Ms. Representative Smith, held off long enough.
Yeah, for the sponsor, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, sponsor, can you tell us approximately how many miles is there in Montana trails?
I'm going, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I'm going to give a number, and then I'm going to look behind me and make sure I'm correct on it. 122? No, I made a mistake.
Would you like to refer?
I'm going to redirect.
Chairman, Representative Smith, I don't actually have a specific number, but as was noted, I believe in the opening that the Department of Transportation was required to do a inventory of shared use paths that are located within the highway right-of-way that we manage, and that number is right around the 200-mile length, and communities and organizations have many more miles that are not included in that number.
Well, go ahead.
As long as you're there, there was some comparison about other states. Do you have the figures on the other states?
Chairman, Representative Smith, I don't.
Ms. Strizich, one just thinking on the, there was a comment about the maintenance on that Lolo Trail and having the contract. Was that maintenance contract, did they give the state a certain amount of dollars and say, here's how much work can you do for that, or was it a contract the state said, we'll take care of all of it, give us as much money as you can? How was that contract set for the maintenance, just the maintenance?
Chairman Logie and committee members, I don't actually know. I wrote down a note to take a look at that or try to get my hands on that contract. Generally speaking, when MDT constructs pathways with projects or in our right-of-way, we do execute maintenance agreements with local officials, putting largely the maintenance responsibility at the local level. It sounded to me as though the county and the group have reached a separate agreement on passing that maintenance then down to this organization. The details of the agreement I would have to look at.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Smith.
Yeah, for Ms. Strezik, please. Now, when they built bike paths in Poplar, they said there's a difference in bike paths. Do you know the cost of them, difference?
Chairman Logie, Representative Smith, I'm not familiar with that, no.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Further questions? Would the sponsor care to close?
Thank you for the good hearing, good questions. I didn't want to leave without, I'll ask myself a question. What was my favorite bike ride? And I've been doing it since 1972. So allow me to indulge just a minute to say that as I thought about the answer to this question, I went way back in my cycling repertoire and remember a few very quiet days on the Finnish-Soviet border, looking at a back road, and that was a day when, you know, it was the Soviet Union, and there were hundreds of miles of very high fence and many, many guard towers. But I was doing a Scandinavian tour and a tour in Poland, and I just wanted to take the most offbeat road I could find and see what it was really like along that border. And maybe it was prescient, who knows, 30 or 40 years later that Finland's the newest NATO member, and it doesn't seem that relationships have improved since those many, many years. But cycling has really provided me with great solace and understanding geography of different countries and riding across Montana. And I think that, you know, this addition of more shared use paths are something that is very family-friendly, tourist-friendly. And as I said, it's a way to bridge gaps and look at these network of areas, which may not be shared use, but get you from one point to the other. The other thing I should say is I'm very interested in our ability to leverage dollars. And when we heard the amount of money available in 24 and 25, I think that having this study bill will allow us to know what we can ask for and get in the line for some of these dollars and build some more shared use paths. So with that, I would ask for your approval of this and move forward, and it would fit into the things that we do in the interim on transportation. Thanks for a great hearing.
That closes the hearing on HJ 15. I think, committee, we don't have any more bills scheduled. We don't have any more that have shown up yet. But I was thinking we could probably do the EAs today on these bills. Is that good with the committee? All right.
Before we do, Mr. Chair, could I make a motion? Could we please untable, take off the table, Senate Bill 108? That's the Barry Usher bill regarding the insurance, proof of insurance.
That is, we'll take a vote on that, members present. No proxies on that. So, you know which, everybody know which bill he's talking about? It's in our packet. Where you didn't have to, let's see, the review. Yeah, bring it up. And you want to read the quick title?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 108 is an act revising laws related to proof of motor vehicle insurance, eliminating the requirement for carrying proof of insurance and amending sections. Mr. Chair.
So we'll take a roll call vote of those present for pulling that bill from the table, SB 108.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Durham.
No.
Representative Dooling.
Yeah.
Yes. Representative Sprunger. Oh, I apologize. She's not here.
Yeah, abstain.
Representative Barker.
Yes.
Representative Worth.
Yeah, no.
Representative Brockman.
Yes.
Representative Butcher.
No.
Representative Kearns. Oh, thank you. Abstain. Representative T. Smith.
Yes.
Vice Chair Fern.
Yes.
Representative F. Smith.
Yes.
Representative Lynch. Abstain. Representative Carter.
Yes.
Representative Baum.
Yes.
And Chair Logie.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, we have 9 votes for yes and 3 for no.
We will pull SB 108 off the table, and we'll be on that
make
later.
A motion, or?
Yeah, we'll.
Okay.
With that.
Mr. Chair, I move do concur for Senate Bill 521.
Do we have any discussion on the Bill 521? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a great bill. I think we have to pass this bill. To move forward on this, on all the many potential frontage activities we have. And I really applaud the stakeholders for getting together and getting a consensus bill to us. So I'm going to support it.
Any other comments? I'm always a little curious on right-of-way charges. And that was one of the reasons why I asked the question. And the way it sounded, it was negotiated. So that's the best way we can proceed, because I understand right away on my own stuff too. You do negotiate different prices for different things sometimes. But Representative Smith
and Mr. Chair, I would agree with you on that. $100 a mile seems pretty cheap, because we put in conduit for like $25 a foot. So they must have did some finagling to kind of sweeten the pot to make it worthwhile for the telecommunications companies.
And Representative.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yes, I would. I don't know much about this, but I think that was for the permission to lay it down, and then, of course, they got their own cost for their own line. But we certainly didn't hear any complaint from any of the providers for that cost per mile.
And I think that may have been part of the problem before there was coming up with a negotiated price. But as far as I know, that's why I asked the question. So any other comments?
I think that price is a screaming deal.
Yeah, the only other way to deal with that would be an
amendment. Oh, I'm not going to touch that right now. No way.
Yeah. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I think it is a good price, but I think we want to encourage broadband and other infrastructure development across the state, so I think it's the right move.
And that was one of the reasons why I asked secondary roads, too, because I think we can't just think about the interstate. We have a lot of secondary roads. This could really help broadband around the state and everything else. I mean, it's some plus money coming on the other side of it that I think we have to look at as well. So, pardon me? Oh, here. Any other comments? Question has been called. We can probably do a voice vote, I think. So all those in favor of Senate Bill 521, say aye.
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 Opposed? Proxies?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sprunger votes aye by proxy.
Representative Lynch votes aye by proxy.
Kearns, does anybody?
Kearns is aye by proxy.
Mr. Chair, we have 15 votes for yes and zero for no.
Sweet. Oh, yeah, that's what I was just going to ask. And since we have the sponsor here, and I know you had asked me, and is that still, I will carry then. Thank you. Senate Bill 521 passes on to the House. Let's do joint resolution, House Joint Resolution 15, do EA on it.
Mr. Chair, I move do pass for House Joint 15, HJ 15.
Any discussion? Yes, Representative Fern, since you're part of the committee now, not the...
It's good to be back in the committee. committee members, I wanted to just discuss really briefly Representative France's 776, and it overlaps on some of the material we have. And I talked to Representative France about this, and I felt that the bill, I felt we needed to do the study before we could implement you shall do this and that. I just felt that it was not in the right order, and I was worried that if we had passed it and just saying it went through the floor, everything, that we would have a tough time implementing it without a lot of needed background work and input from stakeholders and that sort of thing. So that reflected my vote against it back then. It was not any way against the motivation for the bill or what the outcome would have been, but I thought doing the study just was a logical order of things, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Carter.
So I would say that we don't know what we don't know. We don't know what areas are available for bike trails, for shared use paths. We don't know conflicts between e-bikes. We don't know the surface materials. We don't know how much private land is necessary, how much public land is available. We don't know what is available for matching funds to be able to do this stuff. And I think a study bill to figure all this stuff out, to come up with a bigger plan, and then whether we agree or disagree with moving forward with pieces of the plan is a totally different issue. But wrapping our heads around what's available, what's not available, what we have, what we don't have, and all the different players that are involved, I think that's going to be the important part of this plan. So I'm a big yes for this. Oh, and I would add the 1.2 million 74,000 people going through the county, that's about $16 per person. So basically someone stops and gets a donut and coffee, and that's, you know, they're not spending a whole lot of money, but they're not using a lot of our services either. So like we found out that these paths weather more than they are being worn down by people and horses and stuff. And that's another consideration. You know, do we want people pulling trailers on these? Then they're probably going to have to be paved. If we're going to have a side path on there for equestrian use, equestrian doesn't want to use paved paths. And so places where it's appropriate to have those different uses is really important. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Representative Worth, I can tell you're looking.
I just want to be sure there's somebody representing either the trail riders or equestrian interest on the study.
Yeah, and I know we've gone through this on the interim committee. We had some pretty good discussions on bicycle, but it kind of got left out because there was no resolve. But I think we have, there's coordination with the highway department, and there will be some more resolve.
When she talked about the plan, the pedestrian plan, that was probably 10 years ago now, there was and I actually wrote letters on that particular one because it was human-powered in lieu of non-motorized, and they never did get it changed. And so I pulled back any interest in that one based on those definitions.
Any other discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support our Vice Chair, Representative Fern, on this completely. And having seen the interim studies, I think a lot of issues will get fleshed out that we just wouldn't be able to flesh out in a committee hearing. And so I think this would be a good topic for an interim study. And on that note, if I could remind everybody that within probably the next week, you'll be getting something on your desk requesting for interim study positions. And so make sure to get that filled out and turned in ASAP so that our leadership can get those positions filled sooner rather than later.
A side plug. Any further discussion? Yes, Representative Smith.
Yeah, 10 years ago, this legislator from Bozeman, Bailiet, had a study on it. So maybe we can go back and look at that.
Yeah, and things have evolved, because we even had subcommittees two sessions ago in the interim. And so I think we need to proceed with this. Question has been called. We'll just do a voice vote. All those in favor of SJ or HJ 15, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Proxy?
Representative Kearns, aye by proxy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sprunger, aye by proxy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lynch, aye by proxy.
Mr. Chair, we have 15 votes for yes and 0 for no.
HJ 15, we'll move on to the House floor. Now we have SB 108 pulled off the floor.
Mr. Chair, I move or make a motion to concur for Senate Bill 108.
Any discussion?
Do we need to read the bill title or no?
Well, she read it to pull it up. So
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is an act revising laws related to proof of motor vehicle insurance and eliminating the requirement for carrying proof of insurance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. You know, we did have the hearing quite a while ago, and as you recall, when we took an executive action on Senate Bill 108 some time ago, some issues were brought up that weren't necessarily fleshed out in committee. And if you can recall, one of the first statements I had was, you know, in this life, there's a lot of things that are difficult for us to do and some hardships for us to comply with government regulations. But it's my position that putting your insurance card in your vehicle every 6 months just isn't one of those hardships. Having said that, I've also kind of looked for some questions like, what's the need to carry your proof of insurance? And looking for examples of that, of course, the police, they can look on their computer, providing that you're somewhere you got cell service. If you're outside of that area's cell service, it's the officer, I guess, would flip a coin to determine if you do or don't have insurance. Additionally, none of us look forward to backing into somebody in the Walmart parking lot, but the reality is those things do occur. And when we're looking at exchanging information, that's the whole point of having those proof insurance cards. You'll note that you typically get two copies of the same card, and that's the point. You rip off one, you give it to the person that you backed into, you write your phone number down, and that makes everything work out real well in the event that law enforcement can't respond. The other thing that hasn't really been discussed that I'd like you to consider is when we're making laws and we go through those steps to get the law changed, it's often very difficult to unchange what has been changed. And so right now the status quo is you have to keep insurance on your vehicle, you have to carry proof of insurance, whether it's on your phone or as a piece of paper. If we pass this bill and change that law, I'm not going to say society is going to fall into chaos, but
it's going to be difficult for quite a few people, and we're going to run into hardships. And my concern is one of my constituents calling me a knucklehead for this reason. There's plenty of other reasons to call me a knucklehead, but so I'm still a no on Senate Bill 108. It might be worth looking into further for the interim study. Also, if I could add, I did take a survey online in a, I can't say their name, but they have a lot of online contacts. And for the most part, everybody was, no, that's a silly idea. Carry your insurance. It makes life easier.
Go ahead. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, I don't disagree with the good vice chair's the discussion points. It doesn't say that you can't still carry it. I see it more of a way for law enforcement. It's just one more ticket that they don't or they won't be issuing you. People could still carry it. Most people probably won't even know that it doesn't exist. I just see it taking one tool away from the cops to write you a ticket for lack of proof of insurance. Looking at it that way.
I'm going to make a comment. Last summer, I had a calf hit, and that little ways down the road. I happened to come along at the right time. Here's a gal in a vehicle. She was looking for her cell phone. Her car didn't have license plate front or back, but she had an insurance card, and it was an insurance card from New York. Ended up the Highway Patrol. I called the Highway Patrol. He came, investigated. Got the card, showed it to me, and gave me a copy. And when I turned it into insurance, her insurance was expired, but she had the card. And it turns out my insurance followed up with hers just because of the name. And it was because that card was there. There was vehicle registration, which I didn't see. The Highway Patrol took care of that. But the card was important. But I would be willing to... let this go to the floor and let people decide. I'm willing to do that, but and I probably would probably say the same story on the floor. Go ahead, Representative Dooley.
Mr. Chair, thank you. May I ask the retired trooper a question?
Thank you, Representative.
Vice Chair, when you pull over somebody who's from out of state, does their insurance information pull up on the supercomputer too, or does it not?
Thank you, Representative. We expect too much out of our supercomputers, and the answer, I would say, is probably occasionally. Sometimes we don't have that interoperability. I'm not sure the right term. They don't all speak the same languages, and I think in the future that might well be that it's more common. But we don't have it out of state, and I suspect if we're in New York, as an example, they may not be able to find it on our registration returns either.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Representative Carter.
We're spending a lot of time updating our codes to be forward-looking, and there's 20, it looks like, six states that do not require it, including three of the four states that border us do not require it. So there's other states that are dealing with this also, and it seems like the way to go, that insurance is required, no question. Whether or not you have it on your phone or a piece of paper copy, I think should be up to the individual. So I'll be a yes for this, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Yes, Representative Butcher.
I tend to agree with our good vice chairman. Folks, we're sitting here going to get rid of the card, which if I'm an offender bender, I want to be able to get the card from the individual and get the insurance information. And whether they can come up with it on a phone or whatever else is questionable. I think this thing is way premature. Wait another 5 years and see if everything is in place. I'd say, I hate to shoot down our good Senator Usher, but unfortunately, I don't think it's practical to be moving this electronic thing situation in the current current environment. And I travel out of state a lot. And if I get stopped, fortunately I rarely do, but if I did stopped and they want my insurance card, and so we don't have it here. It's all online. Yeah, I don't want to have to deal with that. And I think that it's one of those situations that we really, let's just leave well enough alone. It's not that big an inconvenience. Every time I get my insurance card, I go around sticking it in all the vehicles. And I got a lot of vehicles. But it's still a factor that it makes a lot more sense. So I say we really need to retable this thing.
Mr. Chair, just for a point of clarification for a comment made prior to Representative about how we currently provide our proof of insurance, and we can provide a card copy or a copy on your phone. Current law allows you to provide either as proof of insurance. I'd also like to point out that the law requires you carry your driver's license, but again, that information is also verifiable via the computer. Oh, and we got to carry our proof of registration as well, which from experience is much harder for people to find. And but yes, the information is available there on the computer, and in fact often that same information that's of importance to the officer is available on their insurance card, which is updated twice a year. So I'm a big advocate for carrying proof of insurance.
Any further discussion? Question been called. We'll do a roll call.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Vice Chair Durham.
No.
Representative Dooling.
No.
Representative Sprunger.
Representative Sprunger votes aye by proxy.
Representative Barker.
Yes.
Representative Worth.
No.
Representative Brockman.
Yes.
Representative Butcher.
No.
Representative Kearns.
No, by proxy.
Representative T. Smith.
Yes.
Vice Chair Fern.
No.
Representative F. Smith.
Yes.
Representative Lynch.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Carter.
Yes.
Representative Baum.
Yes.
And Chair Logie.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, we have 9 votes for yes and 6 for no.
So, Senate Bill 108 will go on to the floor. And who would like to carry it?
I think
Representative Smith.
Chairman Logie doesn't sound convinced.
No, I just said I'd get it to the floor. Help get it to the floor. Who, Carter, do you want to carry it? Okay, he had the facts and figures. So SB 108 carries to the floor, and Carter will be carrying it. And do we have any other business to take care of? So far, there is nothing on the books. No, nothing's come in, so I can't say we are completely done because we're still in session. But so far, I have to say thank you, and I did last night, too. That it's been a great committee, and maybe we'll meet again. Maybe something will come in, you know, through the have to come back through us. But I think we're done as a committee. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have said that because there could be a study bill or something. Okay, yeah. So Representative Durham's going to get us back in the committee one more day. So I'll, yeah, and yeah, that could be. Anyway, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.